welcome to the session, Kingdom, Calm, Medicine, and the Next 100 Years of Global Christianity. And we'll probably have people rolling in here over the next few minutes, but my name is Ray Kuntz, and John Mayer and I are collaborating on hosting this particular session over the next hour. And we represent a mission organization by the name of Dale Blonde, which you see on the screen here. And we're an organization. I'll show you a little video clip and just say a few words about who we are in a couple of minutes. But we're a research and strategy organization, and we help mission agencies and churches, cities, research work and set up strategies for the effectiveness of their ministries. And so really the topic we're going to look at today is we're looking at part of the work we do looks at data present time, but we also do some work that looks out 100 to 200 years. And we looked at we've worked with some medical missions organizations and looked at what are the global trends of Christianity that we see moving out next 100 years. And then we looked at global needs for healthcare by country. And we looked at the trends of where those are going by country. And we looked at the intersection point of those two pieces. Where is the kingdom moving? Where is healthcare moving? And the plotted targets that are like the pinpoint targets where we think God could use healthcare to move the gospel. So that's really kind of the center point of our talk today. And we've got a couple other angles that we'll share with you in a minute. But before we start, let's do nothing more important than invite the Lord's presence. And that is what we do, Lord, as we start this meeting. We bow our heads before you. Spiritually, we kneel before you. And we recognize you as the Most High God, the creator of all lands, all peoples. Lord, you have authority over all. And in your kindness, you have allowed us to be part of your family. You have put your spirit in us. And for most of us in this room, you have called us into your work. And so, Holy Spirit, we invite your presence now. And we ask that you be the one that over the next hour speaks and moves in our hearts. Open our eyes to the things that you would have us see and the things that you would have us think about. May there be productive value over the next 60 minutes as we talk together in your presence. So we commit this time to you in Jesus' name.
Amen.
So the first thing I'd like to do, just while we're waiting for any other people to come in, I'll just show you a short video on who we are. We got a 3-minute video on Dale Blonde, and then we'll go into some slides.
In distant corners of our world, where light struggles to pierce the spiritual darkness, there are places untouched, hearts unopened, glimmers of hope can be so hard to find. In these dark places, gospel messengers driven by a passion for Christ often stand at crossroads seeking direction to accomplish their purpose. The challenge isn't just planting a church, but overcoming persecution, bridging divides, and navigating the growing challenges of their call. Dale Blonde doesn't just give direction. We walk alongside, reinforcing, guiding, then stepping back, letting ministry shine in their God-given mission. This isn't mere collaboration. It's a symphony of unity and faith. Because at the heart of Dale Blonde,
okay. Should be okay. Thank you.
Shall be.
Okay, so that's a quick overview of who we are. But I'll, if I was going to just add a few words to that, I would say that over the last 4 years since God founded us, I serve as the founder that God used to start this ministry. We do three things that God has evolved us to over the last four and a quarter years. We do research and strategy with mission agencies globally that work in evangelism and church planting. God brought us field ministries that do evangelism and church planting in 31 countries. So we have about 650 people that are evangelists and church planters. And then thirdly, about a year and a half ago, God had us starting to plant houses of prayer in selected areas that God appointed us to. The idea of the houses of prayer was to engage the spiritual realm with the apostolic realm that we work in. The apostolic realm being evangelism, church planting on earth and in this temporal realm, but there are spiritual forces that are at play that opposes God's work. And so God is establishing houses of prayer which incorporate worship and prayer with the intent of drawing God's presence through worship. God inhabits the praises of his people, Psalm 22:3. Certain types of prayer where God downloads his plans to us, very much as he did with King David. In 1 Chronicles 25 with Jehoshaphat, 2 Chronicles 20, these two kings, famous kings, set up systems of worship and prayer that drew God's presence and made their work more effective. So that's what we're about. So, I'd like to start with just a topic that we've been thinking about over the last months. And when we looked at the growth of the kingdom of God, Christianity, between the time of Jesus' death, 33 A.D., and we looked at almost 300 years, and we found that the kingdom of God was growing, it was doubling every 18.29 years. So explosive growth of the gospel, pretty much a flat global population, as far as historians can tell and statisticians can tell. It was about 190 million people in the world, the worldwide population. But Christianity over those 300 years grew to almost 10% of the population. A doubling every 18 years. And it caused us to ask, the rapid growth of the kingdom of God in the first 300 years, it's not happening today. Today, global Christian population is flat or slightly declining. Islam is skyrocketing. Do we have a lot worse situation now? Are there a lot more downward pressures now than there were in the first three centuries? And as we thought about that, we considered several things. Well, we think we have a lot of persecution today. Well, they had Roman persecution. They didn't have the Bible. They didn't have television. They didn't have computers. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have their transportation was walking or riding around on the back of animals. And so we thought, we have all those things today. Is it possible for the gospel to grow at the rate that it grew in the first three centuries? Is that possible? Why would that not be possible? And as we looked at it, we said, yes, we think it's possible. So what is the constraint then to us on why the gospel doesn't grow as quickly today as it did in the first three centuries? What is the constraint? Because we have all these extra things. We have the internet. We have cell phones. We can get in a car and drive. We can get on planes and fly and carry the gospel. We have the written word of God in our hands. So why is the gospel not growing as quickly today? Don't have answers for that. But in order for, we did some calculations, in order for the gospel to grow at the rate that it did in the first three centuries, for every 100 Christians today, for every 100 Christians, 3 to 4 people converted into the kingdom of God. God's Spirit came on them, and they became believers, born again believers in followers of Christ. 3 to 4 people per year, per hundred Christians, we could make grow at the same rate that they did in the first three centuries, which is a pretty astounding statistic. I mean, that is very few people come to Christ per 100 believers. We don't even have 100 people in this room. I mean, if 3 to 4 people in 1 year out of this entire group, 3 to 4 people through us came to Christ, we'd be growing faster than what they grew in the first century. And we view medical missions as a key tool and a key component that God has given to carry His gospel forward. We look at how the gospel entered the continent of Africa in the late 1800s. It was largely through one of the vehicles God brought His word into Africa was through medical missions, through schools, through dedicated missionaries. And we look at the state of things in Africa today, largely, as I observe it, most of the Christian organizations have backed off of medical missions and building schools. But the ones that have moved forward and grabbed on to those tools that God gave His people are the followers of Islam. And so they're building schools all over, and they're building hospitals, and they're building roads, and their money is coming in, helping businesses. They're helping their people. And as a result, we see the followers of Islam going like this. And we see a struggling, fragmented church that is trying to get its act together to hold the lines of the progress of Islam. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. So medical missions, in our view, is a key tool that God has given us to forward His gospel. One organization we're working with, they have a breakout. They're represented here, Teach to Transform, right out of Southeast Christian Church. Trains evangelists and church planters in countries that are difficult to work in. They train evangelists with some basic medical skills in countries that have very limited access to medical care. And I've participated on several of these trainings and had several of our groups work with them. But these trained evangelists, they're evangelists, they're not medical people, but they get some basic skills on childbirthing and on basic medical care, and they go into these areas that are restricted from the gospel, that the communities, the chieftains of these communities say, no, you cannot enter. But when they bring medical skills to the chieftain in the name of the Lord, the chief in these areas that have no access to medical help at all, some of these communities, up to 40% of the children, the newborns, are dying. And when they bring basic medical skills in, the doors are opened up by the chieftain. The evangelists are allowed in, we have experienced, and they share Christ with every patient encounter. And we're seeing over the last probably 6 years, hundreds of thousands of people come to Christ. And in one area in India that I was particularly close to, the district officials, which is the equivalent to a U.S. county, the district officials replaced the public health nurses with the evangelists who were trained in some basic medical skills, because they actually had higher level skills than the community health nurses. So medical can be a strategic asset for the kingdom. So where we're going to go here over the next few minutes is We believe there's going to be a massive global population shift. That's already been occurring. We're going to share a couple slides on that just to give you a perspective of where we see things going over the next 100 years as people move around the globe. We're going to talk, secondly, a little bit about, we have a couple slides on, as we look at the movement of people and we look at the skills that God has given the medical community and where those could play globally. We're going to look at the intersection. We're going to show you what we see as pinpoint targets geographically for the gospel. And then thirdly, we're going to talk about a piece of work that John has put together. He's going to share that with you, called the Circle of Significance. You have a chart in your hands. Being considered by the Lausanne movement. The fourth Lausanne Congress is coming up in September of 24 in Seoul, South Korea. Lausanne is a global missions conference started by Billy Graham and John Stott in 74, I think it was, 1974. This is the fourth convening of that Congress. This is the Congress where the idea of unreached people groups was coined by Ralph Winter. This is the Congress where the 1040 window was first introduced and came out. And now the Congress is considering the Circle of Significance as the next kind of 1040 window type of idea. So we'll share what they're considering as that work has been presented to them over the last months. So let's look, first of all, look at a potential, well, we think it's not a potential. What we observe is a massive global population shift, and it's really, from our perspective, centered on Africa. And why? First of all, we looked at the three largest economies in the world are the U.S., largest economy in the world, European Union, China. These three economies have declining birth rates. U.S. birth rate is 1.64, EU 1.53. China's going to lose 30 million people by 2030 in population. You need a birth rate of 2.1 in a country to maintain a population. So these three large economies have birth rates indigenously less than what the birth rate is to hold a population steady, which implies to us that these countries with these, or these regions with these economies, are going to have to import workers. Why? Because economies need workers to keep an economy. We all know that. Those of us that live in the United States, sometimes some of the restaurants we go to aren't even open the same hours that they used to be a couple of years ago. Why? Because they can't get workers. You can't find people to do some of the jobs around that used to be covered in the United States. So we need to import workers. So in our opinion, regardless of what your thoughts are regarding immigration, we believe that economies with less than 2.1 birth rate, including the U.S., are going to have immigration, and we're already seeing that. So we see. So then we ask the question: is where are those people going to come from that are going to migrate in those migrating to those countries that need workers? And we looked at birth rates of all countries in the world. And we found India, of course, has a large population, but it's tailing off. I mentioned just a minute ago that China has a declining population. But the area that has an exploding population is a strip of countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Exploding population. Some of the countries have a birth rate of 7.6 children per marriage. You need a birth rate of 2.1 to maintain a population. So they have an overflowing population. And we're already observing migration of many Africans to European nations. As they migrate, and we see many people migrating to the United States, as they migrate, they're changing the cultures and dynamics within these countries. So we looked at the global population migration. from this strip of countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. In 2020 was 16% of the global population. In 2100 is going to forecast to be 36% of all the people in the world are going to come from this region. We looked we calculated global migration stock. Where are people that are going to migrate over the years? What countries are they going to come from? From the sub-Saharan African countries, in 2020, 14% of all the people migrating in the world came from sub-Saharan Africa. In 2100, it's projected to be 32% of all the people coming to other countries are going to come from sub-Saharan African countries, this strip of 14 countries just below the Sahel. So we started looking at the nature of the people migrating from these countries, because they're migrating from these countries, moving to the United States, Europe, other countries. What ideologies are they carrying with them? And in this area here. And this chart shows religions. Northern Africa is all, the green is all Islamic. Southern Africa, all the blue countries are Christianized. It's probably a shallow Christian, shallow gospel setting. There's a clash between these two ideologies right in the strip of countries that I'm talking about that people are going to be migrating from. Islam, God has allowed us to have visibility through some of the people that he has allowed us to work with. God has allowed us to have visibility into the inside of Islam at the very high level. What we have learned is that Islam has a very intentional strategy to create a global kingdom, a global caliphate. And it's a caliphate, it's a kingdom that will be governed by Sharia law, which is a black and white law. And they have a very intentional strategy of how they're going to integrate themselves into different countries and different regions. They have five or six main tactics. One of them is birth rate, open immigration. So they look for countries with open immigration. They come in and they maintain a heavy birth rate. And they have a very long-range view. Their intention is to create a population mass that gains the vote in democratic countries, and they move into elected positions. And as they gain control in governmental settings, we see that for the countries that have already been through this, the laws of those lands change, and they change more to a Sharia-oriented legal system. And the laws that the country enjoyed previously are diminished. So it's a topic that we need to be aware of. We need to keep our eyes on. And we need to consider God's sovereignty and how he would use us to... he created every human being that exists on earth. How would he use us to... restore the people that have left his kingdom and moved to the kingdom of darkness? How would the Lord use us to woo those people back into his kingdom? We need to be cognizant of that. So the question is, as people migrate around the world, particularly from the sub-Saharan African region, what flag will they carry? Will they carry a flag of with a cross on it, or a flag with a crescent and a star on it? And so it's important to us, as we look at things globally, important in now and over the next 100 years, to focus on the gospel being firmly planted into the strip of countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. So as you're looking at your mission organizations and you're thinking about a career in missions and where would God have me go, we would offer a consideration to think about these countries here, because that's where the battleground is as Islam presses down from northern Africa and collides with the shallow gospel church in the middle of Africa. Their intent is to go all the way to, how do we protect the church? And so, God, our prayer is that God strengthens His church through migration of His people. Okay, let's look at the role of medical missions then. We'll take this out of the sub-Saharan Africa context right now, and we'll look at how we specifically see Christian dynamics intersecting with medicine. A couple years ago, John led an effort, a research effort, and we looked probably 32 or 36 different factors in different countries medically. We looked at birth rates and death rates. We looked at infant mortality rates. We looked at access to which countries have easy access to health care, difficult access to health care. 36 factors along that. And we ranked the countries for where is the highest need for health care to be applied versus the countries that have the most access. Then we looked at the global missions environment. Where is the kingdom, if we look at from now, where's the kingdom been over the last several centuries? How's the progress been? And as we look forward, where do we project the progress of the kingdom, the spiritual dynamics going? Some countries are high, have a high Christian predominance, over time they go low. Some rise up from being lower in Christian predominance to higher. We looked at those, and then we intersected those two. We overlaid them, and we came up with this view. We see five strategic areas in the world where medical missions can be applied. Number one was the sub-Saharan African region, and it was tied with South Asia, 1A and 1B, where the gospel can have the greatest impact through medical missions. This was the first. Second, it was Southeast Asia. Third was the Middle East, and fourth was Europe, especially among refugee populations. So if as we looked at this and worked with one particular medical mission organization, they redirected their work from, hey, we're working with everybody in the world and everybody that asks for our help, we're working with all these countries. They streamlined their focus to these five areas in this priority order. So then we suggested to them, and they this is how they have reoriented their missions. We looked at the investing 75% of your resources as a mission agency toward the areas with the highest impact, the greatest return, 20% in a little more difficult areas that are more entry areas, Europe, and then we thought 5% in the more hard soil areas of the Middle East that are difficult ground. Okay, so that's kind of a layout of how we think of things. So if we're going to just summarize this first piece, and we're going to turn it over to John here. Start with the question, the gospel doubled every 18 years in the first three centuries. Like, we have all these advantages now they didn't have. Can we do this now? That's the first question we ask. The second thing is, as we look globally at the global population migration, we think it's really important to keep our focus on the sub-Saharan African nations. Those are very strategic over the next 100 years. And then the third thing, we looked at is if you were going to consider where do I position myself or my mission agency, which works in medical missions, where do we position ourselves? We looked at five key areas globally that we think are the highest impact areas. So John's going to share a little bit about this idea that we brought forward to the Lausanne group and that they're considering for this upcoming Lausanne conference. Yeah, John. You're going to need to wear this, John, because this is for the video.
Oh, he said I can use that.
Okay. Well, use this for the video.
Okay.
Because the people online have to.
Okay.
And then you can use the.
What am I going to do? Oh, I'm going to do both. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, that's for the.
Got
TV.
It. Yeah. Okay. Is this going to? Can you put this on? Sorry for the technical difficulties.
Now, let's see, let me get this over here.
I couldn't do it.
There
either.
We go.
Okay.
That's better.
So just
kind of get ourselves untangled here.
Okay.
John and I are
We're dancing already.
Here.
So I'm going to talk about the circle of significance, but let me just first. Sometimes numbers are too big for people. They don't think in big numbers. And we're going to talk some big numbers. And also some people can't look at a map. They can't find where I live on a map anyways. And probably where you live. So let's do just a little brief exercise. So I want you to picture your own house, where you live. So the average American house is about 2,500 square feet. Mine's slightly smaller. But you can live in an apartment. Don't worry. We're not going to discriminate. Whatever place you live, house, apartment, picture it in your head. You know how many, you may not know how big it is, but square feet, but just picture it. And then picture two parts, 15% of it. So in my house, that would be a big bedroom and probably the bathroom. Okay? So that's in my house. So 15% of your house or your apartment. The other side is 85%. That's easier. It's whatever's left over. So if you're not good at math, just picture a big room and the rest. And picture eight people live in your house. Okay, most of us don't live with eight people, but you're going to live with eight people for this exercise, okay, like it or not. So four people are going to live in that 15%. So four people are going to live in my bedroom and my bathroom. Okay, it's good to sleep in, but I'm not sure I want four people living in that space. And then the other four live in the rest of the house. Okay? So picture that in your head. Can you all comprehend that in your apartment or your house? Okay? So now let's take that to scale. Instead of eight people, there's 8 billion people. And your house is the world. So instead of eight people in your house, there's 8 billion people in the world. And in the circle of significance, half the world, over half, 53%, lives in 15% of the world's land area. Okay, that's pretty crowded. You don't want those four living in your bedroom, right? So that's the circle of significance. So let's talk about it. You all have it here. And I'm going to highlight some things that aren't on here, too. But let me start with what's on here. So over half the world lives there. 4.2 billion people live in that circle. It's not that big. If you know math and you look at the circumference, it's not that big. 67% of all the unreached people groups in the world are in that circle. So if you're thinking I want to reach a people group, not a country or a religion, but just an unreached people group, that would be your target. These little dots on there, they look small. Each one of those dots has 10 million people living in those. Those are mega cities. There's only 46 in the world, and Asia has 29. Okay? Now, 8 of the 10 largest cities in the world are in that circle. 15 of the 20 largest metro areas of the world are in that circle. These are the largest cities in the world in history. So Tokyo, on the top there, the brown, on the top, I don't know direction, whatever you're facing, but the top there in Japan, Greater Tokyo has 40 million people living in one metro area. That's more than all of Canada. Okay? That's a big city. So, traditionally for the last 100 years, missions, especially medical missions, has been focused on rural missions. That's great. But guess what? All these people are moving to the mega cities of the world. So, we have to change our model. That's what Ray was talking about. We have to think of the future. Yes, it might be rural some now, but it's not going to be rural. And most of it's not rural. These 29 dots equal over 500 million people. That's 200 million more than live in America. Just in 29 dots on a map. So the need for urban ministry, medical missions in an urban setting, these are some of the largest slums in the world. So when you think urban, it's not all nice and shiny. It's some of the biggest slums you've ever seen. So think of medical missions in that setting as well. And then you can see all these other religions. Over half the Muslims live in the circle, and all the other religions are even higher, 99%. And I color-coded the map for you. So green is Muslim countries. Brown is Buddhist countries. There's 10 or 12 Buddhist countries. Some are small, you can't see them. And then white is the two Hindu-majority countries. And then the gray is unreligious or communists or some ism, but not. So they're on there. And then a little bit of purple in the circle. The purple, I'm from Minnesota. It's not for the Vikings or Prince. It's one person like my humor. But it's for Jesus. This is the color of Jesus, purple royalty. So you don't see much purple in that circle. And again, huge concentrations of people here. This little island on the bottom there, that little dot on the bottom of the green there, that's Java Island. I've been there, Jakarta. Jakarta is the second biggest city in the world. It's about 32, 34 million. They're going to have to move this city because there's no more place to grow. They're going to start a new capital on a different island. But that island of Java looks not, you can't really judge on the scale there, but I come from Minnesota. We have 6 million people living in Minnesota, less than that. That island of Jakarta is the size of Minnesota. Actually, smaller than Minnesota. In Minnesota, we have 6 million, less than that. This island has 151 million people living on it. Okay, that's more than all of Russia. More than all of Russia lives on a small island in Indonesia. So again, high concentrations of people. And again, question, how do we reach them? So just to be thinking about these things, we want to be strategic. So again, 4.2 billion people, 4.2% are evangelical Christian. So again, just the most extreme ways of thinking about it, whether it's poverty, whether it's slums, whether it's the land, it's small, and all these megacities, any way you want to cut it. And yeah, it's not, if you turn it over, it's not going to replace the circle of significance. It's just a bullseye within the circle of significance. So, and then again, you could see all the world around it. The other thing Ray didn't share, but by 2100, 83% of the world will be Asian or African. 83%. And by 2100. So, Asia's a target, Africa's a target. They're a target for different reasons, as Ray pointed out. But those two are the most strategic. 83% by 2100 will either be African or Asian. The largest churches in Europe are all African. All the mega churches in Europe, the largest church in Ukraine, Kiev, Ukraine, is an African church. The largest church in Belgium is an African mega church. The two largest churches in London, the UK, African churches. So Ray's right, the strategy already works. But if Now think of the opposite. Think if it's Islam exporting to all these places. So the point is, we reach them now, and then they go. They'll be going to Asia. They'll be going to Europe. They'll be coming to America. In my city, we have tons of Africans. In Minneapolis, Somali. We have a Somali mayor of a city. We have city congressmen people from Minnesota that are Muslim. So this is happening right now. And again, we want to be proactive. We don't want to catch up. We want to be ahead and see where God's going and moving and then go where God's going and moving. Henry Blackaby wrote a book about this called the Blackaby Effect. See where God's going and moving, go where God's going and moving. So again, eyes to see, ears to hear. That's how Jesus said it. I have a saying, you can't do the prayer, care, share unless you know they're there. You can rap to it. No rappers, okay. But how do you pray for people? How do you care for them? How do you share the gospel if you don't know they exist? So you have to see where they are and then figure out how to connect to them, how to reach them in their own context. So again, that's a little bit about the circle significance. And I think somebody came in late. We ran out of handouts. So Ray, you want to come up and finish us off here?
Sure.
Okay.
So we're going to just open it up to any questions you may have. And if I was going to summarize, so we talked about several different things. But so why do we talk about Africa, the sub-Saharan Africa, this particular view here? Because we think when we look at global population migration, we think we should be aware that people are migrating out of this area. It's a target for missions. They're hungry. They're underserved medically. It's a target for medical missions. And it's the war zone as Islam presses down from the north, clashes with the Shalafi Christian church. That's a target for medical missions. So that's one point we'd like to make. Then the second summary point would be, if I was a medical missions organization, yes, everybody needs help all over the world. If I was going to pinpoint some areas, these would be the five priority areas based on some research. We're happy to share that research report. It's about a 63-page research report with you. The intersection of 36 different medical
factors
within these different countries overlaid with how is the global Christian dynamics, population dynamics moving. That pinpoints these areas. We're happy to share that paper with you anyway. And then, thirdly, if we look at all the unreached people groups in the world, the peoples in the highest concentration, this is the area. A generalistic missions perspective, but this is the unreached people groups. Most unreached people groups, the largest city,
it's a bullseye.
Population, the bullseye. Yeah, that's kind of our thought. We are. God set us up to participate with Him as He grows His kingdom. And from our point of view, we'll do anything that fosters that initiative. So. It doesn't matter if you're a small organization, big organization, doesn't matter. I think we're certainly equipped to work with very large organizations. We have worked with some large organizations, but we can work with very small organizations.
Yep.
If you have questions that require research perspective, consider giving us a call. We don't charge. All of our work is pro bono. We don't charge anything for our work. We're after kingdom growth, so if we can help you do analysis on statistics in your city, a region that you're working in,
mm-hmm.
You have questions on, I'm in this area, this medical area, and I don't know where in the world this best fits, perhaps we have access to data that we could give you some perspective on that.
I think she had a comment or question.
I've got a question. So I see South Korea in gray.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that South Korea may be sending more missionaries out than the United States is.
Repeat, John, please.
Yeah.
Repeat the question, please.
Yeah. So she asked about South Korea. It's in gray. Korea is about 30% Christian. So it's and there, it's declining in Buddhism and going up more in just non-religious, just secular. So yes, at one time they are sending a lot, but America's still sending the most. I've been hearing this. Someone must have wrote something, but yes, but it's not. They do have a lot of missionaries. They would be probably second, I think. But yeah, question, comment, yes. Okay, we'll take them one by one. She's standing up, so she's serious.
Can you hear her?
Here, maybe we can hand the mic.
We'll pass. Oh, you can hear her. Okay.
Please. Okay.
So I'll just put all three of them out, and you can answer as you see fit. But where do you get your statistics? And these are big world numbers and facts and figures. So it must be, you know. Anyway, I'm curious about those resources. Second of all, what kind of outcomes have you seen from the all of the awareness from the 1040 window and how that changed the direction of mission? And third of all, I don't remember.
Okay.
As you answer these others, I'm
okay, we'll start on the first two. You think.
Yeah, so the 1040 window was premiered in 1989 at the Manila Lausanne. A guy named Luis Bush created it. And at that time, 95% of all the unreached people groups in the world were in that 1040 window. It's on the back there, those two lines, 10 degrees north, 40 degrees north latitude. So you can see it goes through most of, you know, the Muslim countries, and it's got most of India and so forth. So yeah, that was a wake-up call and a clarion call for the church, and many, many missionaries were directed into missions. Since then, many churches, you know, published things and videos and stuff. So I think it was very, at least on awareness level, I don't know if anyone's ever measured, but the unreached people groups have gone down. When Ralph Winter first unveiled the idea at the first Lausanne in 1974, there were 17,400 unreached people groups, and now it's down to 7,000. So in 50 years, it's gone down a lot. And obviously the easier ones were easier to reach, so they went down first. So some of the harder ones are still there. But again, over almost 5,000 are still in that circle. So again, I think it has an effect. I think people, they can grasp one idea or two, and it's like, go there, you know. So I think it was effective. The second question about data is complicated. A lot of people ask that question. So we use a lot of different sources, and we try to triangulate our sources. So we don't usually just take one source, because a lot of sources are skewed. And so we take different sources. A lot of them exist, but no one's ever put them together before. And so we'll take, like he said, with medical missions with our medical. You know, I looked at the WHO stuff and all their stuff, and then I put it with missions. I don't know if anyone did that before. I couldn't find anything, so I just did it. So a lot of this is public. No one ever just puts A and B together. They just to equal C or something. And then a lot of it, we have proprietary data. So there's 2 million mosques in 4 countries on the circle. Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, Indonesia. I did that work. No one's ever measured, even the Muslims don't know any mosques in the countries. And, I mean, God only knows how many hairs on her head, but even the Muslims didn't do that research. So we looked at how many mosques in each country and all these things. So we do, again, if it's there, we'll use it. And if it's not there, we'll create it. That's the quick answer to your long question.
So even things like, you know, mosques, for example, this data does not exist. But we did different data sources, figured out how many mosques were in country over a period of time. We plotted that out on a graph by country, and we find, versus population of country, here's the point that I would make. We find that there is a very intention, which leads us, the data shows that
there's yes, a mind behind it.
Approach. By Islam.
It's not accident.
So they plot a mosque, and then even in a community that doesn't have a lot of Islamic followers, and then they grow, right? So they and plus we have some inside sources.
Yes. We have some human intel, too.
That shows it's a little bit too much to be ran.
So,
churches grow up randomly, right? I mean, we don't have, Christendom does not have a plan to plant churches to grow their population in certain areas.
So,
one more thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's, as we look at data, well, first of all, let me back up. We all know how this is going to end. You know, it's God's world, and He started it that way. That's where He's going to end it. We live in this in-between time. And it can get frustrating. Look at the enemy encroaching on us. But and sometimes we look at the enemy, and we think they're making more progress. But there's a lot of things that I think God's got going on that we don't see. Example. Just one example. I was sitting, I was connecting through Istanbul on my way to Abuja, Nigeria, a couple months ago. And the person I was with received a phone call, and it's a friend of his who happens to be, this would be a, and he handed the phone to me, and I talked to this man. This man is a believer. He is one of the highest level Islamic leaders in the world. I'm not going to tell you his name. He's a believer.
But he's a Christian. Christian. Yeah.
He invited us to his estate in Berlin. He wants to spend time with us to be, I guess he didn't use the word disciple, but that's kind of the idea. So here, A plus, through some other sources we know, there's some very high level Islamic leaders that God is leading into his presence. They are not going to go public.
No.
Matter of fact, some of these characters, if I'm not going to mention their name, if you knew their name, this would be worldwide
shock
as they get as they get beheaded. But so there is some really interesting. There are some really interesting things going on that God has got going on. So we, as we get a little frustrated, I get a little frustrated in my own country at the lack of progress of the kingdom. God is doing work in other places that we don't always see.
And then we're able to see the gaps, too. So, like, countries that are under mosque, for example, Zambia is like 1% Muslim. But guess what? By 2050, now it's the target of Islam. And by 2050, Islam's going to grow to 327% in Zambia. So in a couple of weeks, some of our research is being presented to the president of Zambia, who is a Christian, who wants to get ahead of this. So that he's thinking strategically. He's not going to wait till it grows 327%. He wants to start now. What can we do proactively other than prayer? What can we do so there isn't this onslaught? And again, fear is not what we're going after here. We're not afraid. We just be strategic.
So did you think of your third question?
I did. Thank you.
Okay.
In all your research, do you have any sense, you know, there's so many ways medical missions can be activated. Any sense of which ones of those tend to be most effective?
Please repeat,
John,
for the microphone.
Yeah, so medical missions, she asked what could be most effective. We have some of our TTT people here. Do you want us to share, Rachel, some of the stuff that you've done that's effective? Working with the babies, right? Ray, you got
well,
the training.
Here's what I've experienced. So I used to oversee evangelism church planting for in India, in South Asia, India and surrounding countries, where God was we had a large team there. There were a lot of areas that would not let us in, high persecution areas. But these are areas, I mentioned before, some of these areas have 40% infant mortality, right? So many of you know this. Many of you have probably been here, but in some of these areas, the women are workers out in the fields. They're delivering, they're squatting, and they're delivering the baby. The baby's dropping into the dirt, and they're cutting umbilical cords by putting it on a rock and hitting it with another rock. Right, the baby doesn't breathe. You know, the baby needs to be suctioned. Right, well, first of all, you don't cut a cord with a rock. Right? So we can help them on that. The baby needs to be suctioned. The baby's not suctioned. literally, and then in these places they throw the baby out of the garbage chute, right, as you know. So what can we do? Keeps a Transform as an example of a mission agency. They're teaching childbirthing skills to the evangelists who are then going into these types of communities as midwives, or teaching the skills to the people in the area, always sharing Christ in each patient.
And praying for each person as well.
Always sharing a direct gospel presentation with an expectation of an answer back. And we're finding that these 40% infant mortality is, like, I don't know the statistic, but it's like way, way, almost zero. And but it's a matter of simple things like suctioning and antibiotics and all these types of things. Okay, that's an example. Or health and hygiene. We all know this. I mean, cholera and all these various things are just spread rampantly because people, they don't know about washing hands. Very simple things about latrine access, all these types of things. So some very simple community education things help communities and decrease the incidence of some of these diseases that are taking people out. I was in India. Some guy, a farmer, cut off a couple fingers on a piece of farm equipment.
Ouch!
They grab. Well, first of all, they put some dirt on it to stop the bleeding. Right? Well, that doesn't strike me as the first thing you want to do. So, and then they grab some old rag that I wouldn't even like. I don't know that I would even touch. And they wrap him up with this, right? Well, then I don't know. I don't know what his outcome was, but. I mean, these people get infections and all that. So there are simple things that we can do that medical can bring. Now, I'm going to mention just, because we could keep going on and on, but there is a, John McGarvey is here, and John leads a missions organization that they provide prosthetic arms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For free. To mission agencies. We have, John will give you a case of arms.
Bring that to TSA.
Think about this. A lot of your countries, the people have a lost limb or two lost limbs. Now think, even if it's one lost limb, think about going to the kitchen and preparing dinner. And how do you cut an onion? How do you cut meat? How do you take the fat out of it? You need two hands, right? And these people are incapacitated, but God gives gifts like this to bring to the people that we can serve, and you share the gospel, and it is like, you tell them it's not from us, it's from God. And we find a high acceptance rate. So look up John Garvey if you have an interest in.
Yeah, he's here. I think are we out of time? I think so. Yep, she looks hungry though.
Just a quick question. You mentioned publications for the work. Is that on your website?
We have some things on our website.
Just email us.
I'll give you a card after the session. John will give you a card.
I think our website's on here. You can look it up.
We can send you some of our papers.
So thank you very much, and then we'll stay after and answer a few questions if you want. So thank you. Great job, Ray.